Welcome to CPAC Today in Politics. Coming up, the government reacts after a Canadian is sentenced to death in China.
Canada stands firmly opposed to the use of the death penalty everywhere around the world. We think that this is a cruel and inhumane punishment, which should not be used in any country. We are obviously particularly concerned when it is applied to Canadians.
New revelations about how SNC-Lavalin tried to influence Canadian elections.
We recognize that 10 years ago there was issues around political financing that have been raised. When we came to power and when I became leader of the Liberal Party, we made significant changes to the fundraising regime.
And a Senate committee recommends a suspension for Lynn Bayak.
They also recommend that she sit down with the clerk and be reminded of her roles and responsibilities as a member of the upper chamber, that she be kind of informed about the use of, appropriate use of using her taxpayer-provided website.
It's Wednesday, May the 1st. I'm Mark Sutcliffe. Let's get right to the top political stories this morning. I'm joined by HuffPost Canada's Ottawa Bureau Chief and the host of the follow-up podcast, Althea Raj. Good morning, Althea.
Good morning, Mark.
So China has sentenced a Canadian to death, and Chrystia Freeland, the Foreign Affairs Minister, has had a very strong reaction to this, naturally. And it goes back to the ongoing debate over how we should be handling the controversy around the arrest of Meng Wanzhou and the canola dispute and everything about our relationship with China. So how do you expect the government to respond to this?
Yeah, this is actually the second Canadian that has been sentenced to death. Robert Schellenberg was sentenced to death about 4 months ago. He is another Canadian who was convicted of drug offenses. And the federal government, our government, is obviously tying this to the Huawei issue, as you mentioned. Chrystia Freeland came out on Tuesday with very strong words saying that she thought the death penalty was a cruel and inhumane punishment that should not be used in any country, that the government was very concerned by the sentence, that Canada firmly opposed the use of the death penalty everywhere around the world, and obviously particularly when it was applied or when it is applied to Canadians. It's interesting that this news came basically the day after the Conservative leader called Andrew Scheer called on the Liberals to take a tougher stance when it came to China, and that Canada's former ambassador to China also came out suggesting that Canada should really up the ante because nothing seems to be happening to two Canadians that are still in prison, Michael Kovrig and Michael Spavor, who haven't been formally charged yet, but have been accused of spying basically for the King government in China. So China does have a history of convicting Canadians on drug offenses and sentencing them to death. This would not be the first, but in light of the political situation surrounding the detention of Meng Wanzhou, obviously this is being seen in a different light.
Is there anything the Canadian government can do about this?
Well, there are a number of options, aside from the fact that the man in question could appeal his sentence like Mr. Schellenberg has done, but his pretrial on the appeal has been delayed 3 times. What Canada could do politically, I think, is unclear. I think the government is very concerned about affecting other parts of the relationship with China, as you mentioned, canola. The fact that that China refused export permits to two companies that ship canola into the country is seen as a political retaliation again for Canada detaining that Huawei executive. So I think they are trying to figure out what is the best way to deal with China, and they are not sure how to do so, and that's what we're seeing.
All right, let's turn to SNC-Lavalin, which is back in the news. And the Prime Minister said yesterday that the Liberal Party today would not accept some of the political donations that were apparently being given to the party in the last decade. There was new evidence that came to light that there was basically a scheme by SNC-Lavalin, and it was an attempt to influence the outcome of previous elections, that it led to donations going to the Liberals, a lot more to the Liberals than to the Conservatives. So what should we make of this?
Yeah, so what we learned yesterday in a CBC report was basically the names of the SNC-Lavalin employees whom the election commissioner believed were involved in a scheme that was being basically run at the higher levels of the company in the early 2000s. So between 2004 and 2011, SNC-Lavalin was basically encouraging its employees to donate to political parties. The Liberals got almost $118,000. The Tories only got about $8,000. And then in turn, to kind of like flout the election limits, the company was giving bonuses to the employees who were participating in this scheme. Just to put the dates into context, Mr. Trudeau became the Liberal leader in 2013, so after this was done. But the scales of justice taking the long time that it does, the elections commissioner only basically finalized that report in 2016. So nothing new emerged this week except for the names of the employees. But, you know, it has to do with SNC-Lavalin. It has to do with fundraising. It has to do with the Liberals. And it's just, a new way of once again entering that SNC-Lavalin story. So as you mentioned in the introduction, the Prime Minister came out and said that, since he'd taken over, as one would expect that he would say, things had been cleaned up and in no way would the Liberal Party nowadays accept any such money, which they shouldn't because it's illegal. So yeah. Hopefully not just the Liberal Party, but nobody would accept such money.
Speaking of fundraising, yesterday new data was released that shows how much money the parties have been raising, which is really significant in an election year, obviously. It's important at any time, but especially in an election year. So what did we learn from that?
So in the first 3 months of 2019, the Conservatives raised a whopping $8 million. This is really impressive, not just because of the sheer amount, which is far exceeds what they raised last year by $2 million, but it's more than double what the Liberals raised in this period, where, of course, they were dogged by the SNC-Lavalin affair. They raised $3.9 million. The NDP, for some reason, their numbers were not included in the quarterly results, but there were some impressive showings by some of the other parties. The Greens had their best first quarter ever, raising just shy of $800,000. That's about 50% more than they raised the same period last year. And Maxime Bernier's People's Party raised a similar amount, $762,000. The Bloc Québécois raised $215,000. In the lead up to the next federal election, I think people are just obviously adding up all of the money that they raised.
Sure.
The Tories in the past 4 years have raised repeatedly more money than the Liberals, which is quite a feat considering they are in opposition. Since 2015, the Tories have raised $11 million more than the Liberals.
Those are big numbers by Canadian standards, not so much by American standards. It's interesting. I'm sure there are presidential candidates raising that much in one day.
Exactly.
But this is Canada.
Joe Biden, what he was able to raise shortly after his announcement,
All right, let's turn to a Senate committee that has recommended that Lynn Bayak be suspended from the Senate without pay over some letters that were posted to her website. So this is now going to go before the full Senate for a decision, is that right?
Yes, exactly. So after Senator Bayak published a number of letters that her colleagues and members of the public felt were racist, some I think were categorically racist, the Senate ethics officer was asked to investigate. The officer did that and found that she had violated conflict of interest rules. That report was basically sent to a committee of her peers, and that's the report that was released yesterday publicly, calling for her to be suspended for the remainder of Parliament, so basically until the end of June or when Parliament returns, probably in early November. They also recommend that she sit down with the clerk and be reminded of her roles and responsibilities as a member of the upper chamber, that she be kind of informed about the use of, appropriate use of using her taxpayer-provided website, and that she apologize. There are five, basically, punishments, but one of them is that she apologize in writing for her actions and that she address that apology to all senators.
And do you expect the Senate to adopt those recommendations?
Yes. She was kicked out of the Conservative Caucus by Andrew Scheer. And so I think that the only people that might stand up to defend her have basically been told not to. She does not have many friends and within the independent members of the Senate, nor does she, not surprisingly, have any friends on the liberal side of the Senate. So I think it would be quite shocking, in fact, if the Senate does not take this this view, this sort of more traditional view that you really had to meet a very, very high bar to be expelled from the Senate. If you recall the debates we had over Senator Brazzo, Senator Wallen, Senator Duffy being expelled, and how the behavior at the time of the upper members to boot their caucus or their chamber colleagues without having really a chance for due process to happen, how this was unprecedented, and how the rules basically state that you have to be convicted, you know, and sentenced to more than 2 years in jail before you could be booted from the Senate. Though that has changed with Brazzo, Wallen, and Duffy. And so I'd be very surprised if senators, especially the fact that a bunch of the people in the upper chamber now are new, and I think they bring a more professional sense and less partisan, less institutional sense to the chamber, I'd be very surprised if they decide to keep her.
All right. Althea, thank you for bringing us up to date and sharing your thoughts on all these topics. Have a great day.
Thank you very much. You too, Mark. Have a great Wednesday.
That's Althea Raj, HuffPost Canada's Ottawa Bureau Chief.
Canada stands firmly opposed to the use of the death penalty everywhere around the world. We think that this is a cruel and inhumane punishment, which should not be used in any country. We are obviously particularly concerned when it is applied to Canadians.
Now, here's what political columnists and commentators are writing about today in the Globe and Mail. David Mulrooney argues with lives at stake, Canada's misguided vision of China demands a careful reboot. Mulrooney writes, "There is no shutting the door to China. It is increasingly central to our prosperity and to solving threats to the environment, global health, and food safety. But we will have to be much more thoughtful about how we do this. We can't postpone a rethink of our approach to China, and we must finally be open to the idea that smarter is better than comprehensive, and less is almost certainly better than more." At CBC.ca, Aaron Wherry argues, while climate change is on the move, the political debate is standing still. Wherry writes, "Before spring began, our political leaders were debating how to respond to climate change. Now they're doing it while neighborhoods are underwater. Those rising waters ought to bring a sense of urgency to the debate, but they seem unlikely to wash away the partisan differences that have emerged. The frame of this debate seems to be frozen in place, and the planet might have to get even hotter before that changes." In the Toronto Star, Thomas Walkham argues, climate change could be an election game changer. Walkham writes, "At first glance, the Liberals seem well-placed to fight an election centered on climate change, but reality has a bad habit of interfering with theoretical success stories. If October's election is a referendum on who can best contribute to the battle against climate change, the Liberals still have the edge. But if it turns out to be a referendum on who can best help Canadians adapt to the new reality posed by climate change, that edge disappears." Now, let's look at what's coming up on Canada's political agenda. The Prime Minister will attend the Liberal caucus meeting and question period. He will also speak to supporters at an open Liberal fundraising event in Mississauga, Ontario. This evening, the Prime Minister, Crown Indigenous Relations Minister Carolyn Bennett, and Immigration Minister Ahmed Hussein will take part in an event in Toronto in commemoration of Holocaust Remembrance Day. Transport Minister Marc Garneau will hold a photo opportunity in Ottawa to mark the beginning of the Incentive for Zero Emission Vehicles program. Rural Economic Development Minister Bernadette Jordan will make an announcement in Ottawa. Also in Ottawa, Minister of Science and Sport Kirsty Duncan will make a funding announcement related to gender equity in sports. Fisheries Minister Jonathan Wilkinson will announce investments in research partnerships in St. Andrews, New Brunswick. The Senate Committee on Legal and Constitutional Affairs will hear from the Minister of Justice, David Lametti, on Bill C-75. And the Senate Committee on Foreign Affairs and International Trade will hear from International Trade Diversification Minister Jim Carr on Bill C-85. And that's CPAC Today in Politics for Wednesday, May the 1st. Tune into Primetime Politics tonight on CPAC for coverage of all the day's events. Our podcast returns tomorrow morning. Have a great day.